This episode of the Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning. Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by the law firm of Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at Fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I'm joined here today by a very special co-host, a man who needs no introduction, but I will offer one anyway. The one and only rideshare guy, Harry Campbell. How's it going, Harry?
Hey, Johan, how are you? I appreciate the intro, and hopefully I can live up to the bar, the high bar that you set for me.
Yes. So for those of you who might not know Harry, he is the top expert in the ride-sharing space, particularly focused on the driver experience. He documents everything over on his blog, therideshareguy.com. He also publishes a very fine podcast that you can find everywhere podcasts are published or on YouTube. In fact, yesterday he had an amazing in-depth conversation with Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi. Very timely, I'm sure. Right, Harry?
Yeah, you know, I think not only for this discussion, but, you know, it seems like Uber's always in the news, but this week is no different. So I'm sure there'll be lots to discuss, you know, and how it impacts everything and everyone and anyone.
Right. Well, let me just say this before we start the podcast. It's been an honor knowing you for so many years. It's funny because the other day I was flipping through the channels and on the TV, I saw you show up on like a rerun episode of 2020.
Oh, really?
On the Oprah Winfrey Network. And I got all excited and I was like, hey, I know that guy. Yeah. So I guess the first thing I kind of want to ask you is just how has the Rideshare Guy blog evolved over the years? Because I know, you know, as far as driver resources go, right? Like you were one of the OGs as far as offering, you know, rideshare drivers information about earnings, about, you know, strategy as far as rideshare driving. And then you've kind of dabbled into some things here and there. Like I know you every year you put out this awesome survey that I always love reading because it has so much great information.
Yeah.
But yeah, how has the blog kind of evolved over the years?
Yeah, so funny enough, you know, you are one of the people who's kind of known me since the original, the OG days of the Rideshare Guy, when really the only one calling myself the Rideshare Guy. But luckily that moniker sticks, and I got lucky that I picked a good name. So, you know, it's funny because I started driving for Uber and Lyft for a lot of the reasons that, you know, everyone else picked it up, you know, just to make a few bucks, had a little spare time, and pretty quickly realized it was a little more complex than it looks. It's not rocket science, but it did take some time and some energy and some effort and some skill. So I started documenting my experience on the blog, and really over the years, you know, luckily I started writing about Uber and Lyft from the worker's perspective at a good time. The company's kind of exploded, and I've been able to hire a few contributors, so all gig workers, drivers from around the country, and now we've got a network of contributors, podcasters, YouTubers that are all out there really just creating content, like you said, about Uber and Lyft, but really from the worker's perspective and what it's like, how much you're actually making, the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between, the vomit, the puke, and you know, everything that drivers deal with on a daily basis. So that's really the media side of the business. And you know, behind the scenes, I'm working on a lot of the, you know, kind of the ways to make money, basically how we pay for it all.
Right, right. And your background is in engineering, right? Or you're like a mechanical engineer.
Yeah, so I was an aerospace engineer. So I was a structural engineer for Boeing. And I think I was working in Seal Beach at the time. And then I started driving for Uber and Lyft. I actually signed up for Uber with a recruiter. This was back when they had recruiters. That's how bad they needed people to drive.
Wow. And they would hand you that phone, right? They used to just have people handing out like iPhones.
Yeah,
to,
I came
with the
in
Uber app, right?
Right after. They were handing, I think I could use my own phone or they would give me one, and it was $10 a month to use their phone. So I used my own, but it was funny because I signed up in the Boeing parking lot in Seal Beach, if my old boss is listening. And after work that day, I did one trip on my way home, and it was a student at UC Irvine going from the library to home. And at the time, Uber was paying $500 bonuses after one trip. So I got $500 deposited to my account. So you could see that I had a pretty exciting introduction to Uber. And luckily, I've been able to build a small media business from it all.
Yeah, so it's crazy that you mentioned that, because I remember when I signed up for Lyft the first time and I was living in Orange County, they just gave you free rides. They gave you like 30 free rides, yeah. And you can go basically anywhere. But the actual like driving zone was so small. And then eventually over time it expanded. Yeah. So I don't know if you remember those days when it was like you could only drive within this certain radius, or you could only pick up passengers, you know, within that radius.
Yeah.
And then, you know, anything outside of that was no man's land.
Yeah.
You're
bringing up, we call these the good old days, because I think I actually, the impetus for me signing up for Lyft was actually a driver that I had. He told me he was getting paid $25 an hour just to sit there and watch Netflix. And it was kind of as they were trying to build up the passenger base, they were just paying drivers to sit there. And I said, well, that sounds like a job for me, and the rest was history.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I remember just like a short ride would cost you like $35, $40, and things have really changed since then.
Yeah.
Like the pay structure has changed since then.
Yeah, no, so, a lot has changed. I mean, I think a lot of drivers, you know, if drivers have been around that long, I think a lot of them would say that things have changed for the worse. But, you know, I just pulled up one of my first podcasts that I did back in August of 2014. I titled it My Best Week of Rideshare Driving Ever. And I think I went into how I basically drove in Newport Beach for a weekend and just did some surge rides on July 4th, and it was every ride was 3 or 5x, and that was back when they were charging a lot more, and so you could make a lot. But I think also really the lesson that I took from a lot of the early days was that for some of these jobs, there's some risk in trying new things out or starting new things, but if you're one of the early adopters for a new line of work or a new product, there are a lot of benefits, right? So you have to sort of weigh the downsides. For me, the downsides was, okay, I try this out, worst case I don't make that much money or I don't like it and I stop doing it, doesn't cost anything. But best case is, you know, I ended up making thousands of dollars off of my driving, and you know, it was Friday, Saturday nights in Newport Beach with a lot of fun people, so it was nothing to complain about.
All right, so kind of going back full circle to the current moment, where do we even begin? I mean, this has been such a crazy week in the world of ride hailing land. But I guess let's start with this proposal that Dara made yesterday in his op-ed for the New York Times. For those of you who didn't read this op-ed, I'm going to put it in the show notes. But as many of you know, for years, ride-hailing and other gig economy companies have been criticized for their decision to classify workers as independent contractors. So this means Uber and Lyft drivers have not been eligible for unemployment pay, traditionally, workers' compensation and other benefits. So in this op-ed yesterday for the New York Times, Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi suggested that the government act to create a new worker classification for gig economy workers. So this proposal would require gig economy companies to create benefit funds where drivers could use this money to pay for health insurance, vacation time, and other purposes. So just a little bit more background for those of you who may not know. At the moment right now in the U.S., pretty much all workers are either classified as W-2 employees or independent contractors. So if you're a W-2 employee, that typically means if you're working full-time, you're entitled to a whole host of benefits. If you're an independent contractor, technically you're running and operating your own business. But it was kind of interesting because Khosrowshahi was seeking out support from the government to create this new worker classification for them to offer additional benefits. But I guess my question to you is, Harry, what are some of your general thoughts or observations on this plan? Because it's super interesting, right? Because, you know, we're going to jump into Prop 22 a little bit later on in the podcast, but I guess what are some of your general thoughts about this benefit plan? Because I know you discussed it with him a little bit, yeah. So you have some additional insight there. So what do you say?
Yeah, so I guess I'm a good person to talk to since I did have the opportunity to interview Dara Alvar on my podcast. Yes. After...
RideshareGuy.com, if you got... Is it the RideshareGuy.com?
Yeah, the RideshareGuy.com. The podcast is available, you know, in iTunes or wherever anyone is listening right now. It's our most recent episode that a nice tight 30 minutes, so not too long. You know, used up every minute that I had with him, but couldn't go much over. And, you know, so fortunately, you know, I did have the opportunity to speak with him and actually get some details in addition to what he mentioned in the op-ed. And I think really you laid out a great summary of kind of the issues that have been happening up until this point. And I think when you think about everything that Uber and Lyft and other, you know, gig working companies, especially in California, have had to deal with, I think that for Uber, it was sort of just like, enough is enough. We got to figure something out. And I think that for me at first, it was kind of like, okay, how do I fit all this together? They've got this op-ed, they've got this new proposal. But I think a simple way to look at it for the listeners is just to understand that basically Uber and Lyft, you know, but we'll talk about Uber specifically, they don't want drivers to be employees. And they feel that it's an existential threat to their business to classify drivers as employees. So they're going to basically do everything they can and fight like hell to not make that happen. This proposal is really one of the steps that they're taking, I guess you would say, with legislators at kind of like a national level to say, okay, hey, we don't like employee status, but here's what we're proposing instead. And this is our starting point. It doesn't have to be like this in every single state. California is different, which we can get into if we want. But here's what we think drivers should get. We want them to stay independent and have the flexibility that they enjoy. But we want you know, every company to have to contribute to this benefits fund, which would, in the example they cited, so sort of, again, this is their starting point, would equal about 5% of a driver's earnings. So if a driver's making $1,000 a week, it would be about $50. And so you can kind of see that it's not a ton, but, you know, it's it's a starting point, I guess you would say, right? And, you know, when you look at your how much your healthcare costs and how much vacation and all that, right, $50 doesn't go too far for things like healthcare. Oh, no. But you know, it is, again, it's a starting point. I think it should be a lot more, as you might imagine. I'm on the driver's side, but the other big caveat, or not caveat, but the other big, I guess, point that they were trying to make is that what's challenging for them, and I do agree, is that if they start providing certain benefits to drivers, then it actually strengthens a lot of the legal cases that they're facing around drivers being employees, right? If you're giving drivers all these benefits that make them look like employees, it's hard to argue that they're not employees. And so I think that's the point they were trying to make. Although, you know, I said, well, you can always just pay drivers 5% more to Dara. And, you know, I think there are other options on the table, which we can get into the details if you'd like, but that's kind of the high level of my understanding.
Right. And I did see that during the pandemic, I mean, we're all embroiled in this pandemic. Yeah. And as a result, I mean, Uber's bookings have gone down by about 75 to 80%, right? So we've seen that, you know, the government has offered unemployment pay for drivers, for ride-hailing drivers. Yeah. And we're going to jump into that a little bit further in the conversation. But I did see that a lot of ride-hailing drivers were apprehensive about even applying for unemployment benefits because they were like, well, if I get unemployment, that technically does that complicate my status with Uber, because I do want to be a company employee, right? And I think part of that process was kind of declaring yourself as an independent contractor. I believe that's for the PUA benefits.
Yeah,
so, you could correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure
you're... So I will say this is something I've been following very closely because, you know, normally gig workers, independent contractors, business owners really aren't eligible for, well, I guess I would say gig workers and anyone that's kind of 1099 is not normally eligible for unemployment insurance or benefits. You sort of typically have to have a W-2 job to be eligible for that. And part of the, basically what they call the PUA portion, it basically extended the unemployment insurance, the normal unemployment insurance benefits that states provide to drivers. And then the additional $600 a week that gig workers got was, I believe, called the FPUC, which I can't remember the actual spelling or what the acronym means, but I know it's FPUC. I could probably guess right. it, but that's basically the gist. So drivers were getting anywhere from $600 to $1,000 a week just to sit on their butts for the past 3-4 months. And, you know, I think that was really the input. That was the goal of the program, though. They wanted people not to work, right? So in that way, I think it worked very well. And at the beginning, there was a ton of confusion about, you know, just answering, you know, the very question that you asked at the beginning. But I think ultimately what it boiled down to was a lot of drivers did end up going for, you know, this unemployment. And so they were getting the $600 a week, and then they were getting a smaller amount. Sometimes in certain states, it was based off of their 2019 income, and that was how much they could qualify for unemployment insurance. Like in California, $167. So a lot of Uber and Lyft drivers, and basically anyone who applied, should have been getting $600 plus $167 a week. So that's $767. Right. And now that that FPUC has expired, the $600 is gone, but drivers should still be getting $167 a week. And where it gets really complicated is that certain states, like California, that passed AB 5 in the beginning of January 2020, that says drivers are employees. So as a driver, you could alternatively apply for unemployment insurance as an employee. And you know, when that happens, Uber and Lyft aren't providing earnings data because they don't feel that you're an employee. So the EDD in California would reject you, and then you would have to appeal and submit all your statements. And some drivers did end up getting paid that way, so they actually got a higher amount that way. So very confusing, but if anyone's interested, we've got a number of videos on our channel that we kind of covered this on like a daily, weekly basis, and it's still evolving. So it's tough to stay on top of, but we're trying our best.
Right. I mean, it's tough for everyone to stay on top of. I mean, even, you know, after this week's announcement or the executive order that, you know, people would be receiving an extra $400 in their unemployment checks. Yeah. I mean, people don't even know what's happening with that. yeah. But one thing I was going to say, just kind of, you know, go, and we can actually get to this question after the break. We're going to take a quick break. But before we go to break, I just want to leave this question in your head about Uber drivers wanting to be employees, right? Because some of your data, yeah. and I think it's about 70% yeah. of the drivers you have spoken to or have surveyed have said they actually don't want to be company employees. So we'll discuss a little bit more about that after we come back from the break on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. We're sitting down with Harry Campbell, the rideshare guy. You can visit his website at therideshareguy.com. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about Uber drivers being classified as company employees. A recent survey, or this was a 2019 survey, right, Harry?
So we actually, we do an annual survey of drivers. We usually try to get about 1,000 responses. But since the W-2 versus independent contractor issue has been so topical, we did a recent survey in May, and I think we got about 734 responses. And so I believe the 71% number is from that most recent survey.
Okay, so 71% of the drivers that, you know, Harry was able to survey said they didn't want to be company employees. And this kind of goes into the conversation about gig economy jobs and how flexible they are and what kind of benefits they should offer, right? Because as we were kind of talking about this proposal that Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi was talking about that would offer a benefits fund in lieu of the traditional benefits structure. So I'm assuming the reason why Uber is thinking about this proposal is because, you know, an Uber driver typically shares, or, you know, they do work for other companies, right? So an Uber driver might also be driving for Lyft. They might be delivering groceries for Instacart. They might be doing stuff for Postmates. So is kind of the thought process behind this idea, you know, Uber basically saying, hey, we don't have enough work for you guys, right? You might not be driving a full 40 hours, and we know you might want to split your work and work for different companies. So this is a more innovative solution. Or do you think it's just Uber trying to get a discount on, you know, what they would be paying? Because yeah. I think an analysis from Barclays shows Uber would pay about $2,000 per employee per year if they were to reclassify workers as employees. And then, you know, in that op-ed, the Uber CEO said each driver would receive about $1,300 in benefits per year if they were working 35 hours, you know, per week. So, yeah, what are some of your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I think it's it kind of depends on what side of the equation you're on, you know. So there are a lot of folks that want to be employees, and or not a lot, but I'd say there's some folks that want to be employees, and these tend to be the drivers who are more full-time, the ones who are doing 30, 40, 50 hours a week or more. And frankly, I have no problem with them wanting to be employees. I totally understand that if you're doing that many hours, you don't really get to take advantage of a lot of the flexibility of driving for Uber and Lyft. I mean, right. I think it's still better than working for McDonald's and making the same amount of money, since you could potentially work 80 hours one week and zero the next. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. it'd be tough, but you can do that. And so there is some flexibility there, but you can kind of see we're at the margins at this point. But a majority of drivers, whether you look at Uber and Lyft's data, or if you look at surveys that we've done, a majority of drivers are part-time. They're doing 10 or 20 hours a week or less. And so it should, you know, I don't think it should be a huge surprise that most of them want to be independent contractors. I think they do value the flexibility of driving for Uber and Lyft and the ability to, you know, sort of work 5 hours here, work 10 hours there. They're not flipping the app on and off every few seconds, but compared to a normal job, you know, I've worked over 15 different types of jobs probably in my life, everything from, right. you know, sort of service work and, you know, very frontline work to, you know, more cubicle and, you know, now working for myself and running a business. So I've really ranged the gamut, and Uber and Lyft is honestly one of the most flexible jobs in the world that I've ever tried. And I think that's what people who want to remain independent contractors, I think they're really scared of losing that flexibility. There's nothing in the text of AB5. If you're an employee, there's nothing that says you will, you know, being an employee has to suck. There's nothing that says that. There's nothing that says it can't be flexible. But of course, traditionally, if you go to work at Starbucks, you know that you're going to have shifts, and you know that it's going to be more rigid than driving for Uber and Lyft. And so, you know, I think you have to take Uber and Lyft's arguments with a grain of salt. I don't, you know, I think there are a lot of unknowns if drivers were to become employees, but I think it's a good bet the drivers will lose some flexibility. For me, and kind of what I've tried to focus my discussions and conversation on, is more, are the trade-offs worth it? Is having a minimum wage worth a little bit less flexibility? And so for things like that, I would say yes. I like the idea of an earnings floor, you know, so that drivers and the companies have more aligned incentives, right? But healthcare right. is an example, and this kind of ties into the benefits fund, of something that only 14 or 15% of people from our most recent 2019 survey of over 1,000 drivers said that they did not have healthcare. And that is a big number for those drivers, but that means 85% do, right? And they're getting it from Medicare, mm-hmm. Medicaid, a spouse, they're a different job or whatever it might be. And so you can imagine if everyone is contributing to healthcare funds, you know, they raise the cost, right. But only 15% of people are benefiting, there's going to be trade-offs for that. And so I think that what I would like to see is just more changes that benefit everyone, right? And so that's sort of what I liked about the benefits fund, is that it did benefit everyone, right? You could go use it for whatever you want. You could use it for healthcare. It may not be enough money to cover healthcare. That's why I said it should be more money. But if you already have healthcare, then you can just look at it as a straight cash bonus.
Right. And that was one thing I was going to mention, is that just because you're a W-2 employee, as I'm sure you're aware of this, just because you have a W-2 employee doesn't necessarily mean that the benefits that your company is going to offer you are going to fit your needs,
yeah.
right? It might still be too expensive for drivers to get the, you know, company-sponsored healthcare.
Yep. It may not be a good plan.
That's one thing I thought was very interesting.
You know, even in California, for example, you know, if you have employees over 30 hours, I believe you have to give them health care. So it could even be a situation where Uber limits, you know, if drivers were to become employees, they start limiting that, hey, you know, we're not going to have any drivers go over 30 hours so that we don't have to pay them health care. Or we're going to limit you to 40 hours a week because over 40 hours in California, you have to pay time and a half for employees, right? And so now you start to think about it like, hey, you know, there are drivers out there who do 50 hours a week every week. And, you know, they might complain and grovel here and there because that's a tough job, but they might be making, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a week and they're happy with the money they're making by becoming employees. They might get some benefits, but they may actually be limited to 40 or even 30 hours a week. And so those are the types of trade-offs that I think we should consider. And frankly, like, I don't know for sure that that would happen. Uber doesn't know for sure. The proponents of becoming employees don't know for sure. There is a lot of unknown. And so, you know, I think that there, you know, it's kind of, you have to identify, like, what are some things that are likely to change that are kind of up in the air, and then weigh all the pros and the cons. But it seems like I'm one of the only people, you know, weighing the pros and the cons. Most people are, you know, Uber is sort of saying everything will go to hell if drivers become employees, and the proponents of AB5 are saying that, you know, everything's going to be exactly the same, but we're just going to get paid way more. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, you know, it's kind of simple math, right? The rider pays $10, Uber takes $2 or $3, and the driver gets the rest. So if drivers start making more, you know, Uber's going to start charging riders more, and there, then you start to get into a lot of the second order effects.
Right. And I will say, I mean, you know, on the business perspective of things, because I'm sure you're aware of that as well, I mean, Uber and Lyft right now are not profitable companies, right? So if they were paying all these additional surcharges, you know, ultimately the consumer pays for it. Yep. It might drop demand for the service, and, you know, there might be like that. That's why Uber and Lyft want to defeat, right, you know, all these initiatives to try to classify workers as employees.
Yeah. And I mean,
as I'm sure
Uber just released their quarterly earnings. I will say, though, that, you know, if you look at if you want to, you know, I'm not a financial expert, but if you look at, like, for example, the adjusted EBITDA of Uber for their rides business alone, so that's UberX, basic, you know, Uber rides, basically, they actually have been profitable for the last few quarters. Even in the pandemic, they made $50 million. They reduced their costs by a ton, which is, you know, kind of one of the reasons why Uber is such an interesting business, because during a pandemic, their rides business actually still made money, even though the volume was way down. There are definitely some people that would argue over, you know, some of the costs that they don't include in that EBITDA, but Uber Eats is, right, you know, sort of their kind of growth flagship right now. It's losing a bit of money. I think it lost $230 million last quarter. And so I think where people would push back is that, you know, hey, if these companies aren't profitable, and they would be even less profitable or maybe even go out of business because of an employee model, like, you know, I guess that's okay, right? I guess that's where some people would push back, right? Some people would push back and say, hey, you know, you've been paying, you know, riders, for example, for the past 5 or 10 years, you know, since I started driving. I kind of call it the golden era of rideshare. Like, you've been paying for a lot of subsidized rides, whether it was VC money or drivers who didn't really realize it. And so I you know, not that I, it's complicated. It's a nuanced, right? Not that I completely agree with that viewpoint, but, you know, just because a company can't make the business model work, I don't think is necessarily such a bad thing. Sometimes you need to get a better business model, right?
Right. And one thing I did want to mention before we have to go to break again, but this idea of, like, a minimum wage.
Yeah.
There is one market, at least one market that I'm aware of, that has a driver minimum wage, and that's New York City. And I believe it's $17 an hour after expenses. Do you have any insights as far as what's happened in that market since they implemented that wage floor?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And one of the reasons why I like pointing to New York City is because it's really the perfect case study as a small example of, I think, what might happen if drivers become employees. And so New York City and California, really, too, typically are some of the leaders in regulation when it comes to new mobility options like Uber and Lyft. And so what New York City did was they basically enacted it's sort of a quasi minimum wage. It doesn't say that drivers will be paid $17 per hour after expenses exactly, but that's sort of the goal. And it's based off the utilization rate of the drivers. So basically what the city is trying to do is keep drivers busy, and they calculate the expenses and the income off of that and set the rates based off of that utilization rate, right? So if there's a quarter where drivers are really slow and there aren't any rides and they're not making that good of money, they sort of hold the companies accountable. And so that goes back to what I talked about when I said it aligns incentives. And that's what I like about the minimum wage. One of the top complaints of drivers really for the past few years is that there's oversaturation of drivers. There's too many drivers, right? Uber and Lyft, I think there's this feeling that I kind of agree with, is that they want as many drivers on the roads as possible so that when you as a rider call for a ride, it's there quickly. But as a driver, you kind of want the opposite, right? You want as few drivers on the road as possible.
You want to maximize your earnings at the end of the day.
So
right?
When it comes to the minimum wage in New York City, I think the formula they instituted was very smart and it aligns the company's incentives and makes sure that there's this earnings floor. The issue that we're seeing and that drivers have been pretty vocal in complaining about is that now Uber and Lyft require scheduled shifts. And so instead, like in Los Angeles, if I wanted to leave this interview, I could go sign on to my Uber driver app and go online right now and probably have a ride in a few minutes, maybe in 5 to 10 minutes, even right now in the middle of a pandemic. But in New York City, which we may talk about it later on, but
We'll have to talk about that.
And you know, in New York City though, you sort of have to schedule shifts in advance, which is a lot closer to what it's like for the food delivery services. So there is less flexibility, and it makes sense, right? Uber and Lyft don't want to pay drivers to sit there in non-busy areas at non-busy times, so they sort of prioritize the best drivers, the most valuable to the company, and give them the best shifts. And that's kind of pissed off a lot of drivers in New York City, but those are the types of trade-offs that come with a minimum wage.
So interesting. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about another challenge gig economy companies are facing in California, which is Prop 22, when we come back from this quick break on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick & West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast with Harry Campbell, the rideshare guy. Yesterday, Uber and Lyft were dealt a blow as a San Francisco Superior Court judge issued a preliminary injunction that would require both companies to classify workers as employees. The judge paused the injunction for 10 days, giving both companies the opportunity to appeal. Uber and Lyft have vowed to immediately appeal the decision. This was all based on a lawsuit that was filed by California Attorney General Javier Becerra, along with city attorneys from Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Francisco, saying Uber and Lyft had misclassified drivers as independent contractors. This is all leading up to the ultimate battle that's happening this November. And I'm not talking about Trump versus Biden, but I'm talking about Prop 22. An upcoming ballot initiative that would repeal Assembly Bill 5, which Harry briefly mentioned in our last break, for ride-hailing and delivery companies. They're putting like $110 million behind this initiative, and that's a combination of DoorDash, Uber, and Lyft. A lot of drivers have been opposed to these companies' involvements in this proposition. But I guess the ultimate question is, do you think Prop 22 is going to pass in California? Mind you, this is a voter initiative, so voters in the state are going to be able to decide what they think. And it's interesting because a yes vote means that it repeals AB 5, right?
Yeah. So a yes vote basically means that you're on Uber and Lyft's side. And a yes vote means that you're, you know, so Uber and Lyft has proposed kind of what they call a hybrid model where they're putting forth a, again, I don't want to call it a minimum wage, but they're putting forth let's call it an earnings floor, but it doesn't include waiting time, right? So it's sort of like a minimum wage, but only when you have a rider, which doesn't really do much in my mind, right? Because if you're not busy, then you could still make $0 an hour, right? So I don't know what the best wording to call it is, but it's sort of, you know, some sort of earnings guarantee, maybe we'll call it. And basically, you know, again, they don't want to comply with AB 5. So this is sort of their compromise and, you know, kind of what they're bringing to the voters. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, there are, well, Uber just said that they had in 2019, they had 1 million drivers across the U.S. So, you know, in California, maybe it's 100,000 or 200,000 at the most, you know, if I had to guess, but there are a lot more voters than that in California. So ultimately, you know, this proposition is not really going to be decided by the drivers, so we can definitely, and gig workers, I mean, I think it's important to talk about their viewpoint, but I think that's what's interesting, you know, with this proposition is that, you know, it could potentially pass if, you know, the companies are spending $110 million and they just go out to regular voters and use, you know, I think a lot of the messaging that they might use is going to be appealing. It's going to be like, hey, do you love Uber? Well, this, you know, the AB5 law is going to screw it all up. And if I'm a consumer of Lyft, I'm like, hey, I love Uber. I love Lyft. I don't want the government to go mess this up. It seems to be working for me, you know, even though you may be aware of some of the issues that drivers are having.
Yeah, and I think in New York there was a similar initiative like a few years ago, right? Where and I don't distinctly remember what the issue was, but I remember Uber was threatening. Yeah, it might be something about that.
I think they were trying to cap the number of Uber vehicles in New York City. And so Uber probably, you know, I think they enacted this mode that would basically show how few drivers there would be and basically how crappy the availability would be, you know, if this ordinance were to pass.
And then I remember seeing like all these celebrities basically, and I don't know if they were paid by Uber, but they basically said like, no, we can't let this happen. You know, so it's kind of interesting because when you put this out to consumers, right, I think the big messaging point or the big marketing point is going to be if you don't vote yes, this is going to get really expensive, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, even if you're thinking about an Uber Eats delivery, right? What is it like? There's some restaurants delivering, or the Uber Eats is delivering food from some restaurants for like 49 cents, 99 cents. It's like crazy amount. So I think that's really like what the messaging point is going to be is just like, hey, you know, if you don't vote yes, it's going to get really expensive. And that's going to drive consumers to be like, okay, I'm just going to vote yes because that's the messaging.
A lot of the messaging.
Not really explain what it's about.
Yeah, a lot of the messaging I've seen so far, they've started running the yes on Prop 22. So the Uber and Lyft folk have started running some TV ads and, you know, sporadically some online marketing stuff. So you'll definitely start seeing it as you get closer to November if you're in California. But a lot of the messaging I've seen so far too has also revolved around the flexibility kind of argument, right? Mm. And, you know, featuring stories of couriers who are, you know, going to school at night and then working, you know, working in the day or vice versa, right? And those kind of heartfelt, you know, feel good stories, which, you know, I think there's some kernel of truth too. I mean, there are a lot of drivers just out there kind of grinding, grinding it out, right? And of course, some are, you know, soccer moms that drive in between their kids. But I think that's what's, you know, interesting about a political campaign is that if you have basically some good kernels of truth in your messaging, you can really kind of expand on that and make that seem like every single driver, you know, is a single mom that, you know, has to work for Uber in between, you know, her kids being at school or someone, you know, training for this new line of work. And this is the only job they could get because they barely, you know, just moved to the country and only speak a little English. So, you know, you can kind of start to see that some of this messaging will be probably pretty compelling. And I think that, you know, to Uber and Lyft's credit, I think that drivers will lose some flexibility, you know, and like Uber and Lyft actually cite my survey quite a bit, which is an interesting feeling since I kind of, you know, I'm actually personally, I don't know if I said this, I'm a no on Prop 22 personally, but more because I don't want drivers to be employees, but more because I think that their proposal, their hybrid proposal doesn't go anywhere near far enough. So that's sort of What's really interesting about this is that, you know, you have a lot of, on the driver's side, you have the folks who want to be employees. They're a hard no on Prop 22 because they want to be employees. And then you also have a lot of other drivers who want to be independent contractors. So they might be a yes because they want to be independent contractors, or they might be a no because they don't think this goes far enough, like me. And so it's interesting that you have a few different viewpoints there.
Yeah, and the one thing I was going to say is that, I mean, this is just my personal thoughts on the situation, but when AB 5 was passed, I felt like there just wasn't that conversation between lawmakers and the driver community. And I don't know if you feel that way as well, but it seems like the whole idea of AB 5 was, we just want to make Uber and Lyft drivers employees and not explore possible alternatives to kind of adjust everybody's needs. Yeah. But I don't know if you also felt that way as well.
So I'm not a legislative expert. I've definitely dabbled a lot more than you know, I would have guessed 5 or 6 years ago, because Uber and Lyft are always right in these battles. But I think AB 5, it's clear now, it was a pretty poorly designed law. You know, I saw a stat the other day that there's over 50 exemptions and carve-outs. So it was sort of like, you know, I think the impetus for AB 5, you know, was fine, but they applied it to basically anyone and everyone. And then they had to end up excluding doctors and, you know, real estate agents and, you know, basically anyone and everyone, the who's who of sort of independent contractors, when all along it seemed like they were targeting Uber and Lyft drivers and other gig workers, which is fine. You know, I think that's the legislator's prerogative, but I think they should have, you know, kept it to Uber and Lyft drivers and other gig workers if that's who they wanted to target. So I think in that respect, you know, the bill could have definitely used some work, but you know, either way, it did end up passing. And you know, like my survey said, you know, most drivers, I think that the legislators did talk to a lot of drivers. I think they probably were more on the camp of the ones who wanted to be employees, though, the full-time drivers, right? And again, you know, like if you talk to full-time drivers, I totally agree. Like a lot of them probably should be employees. And so I think it really comes down to the question, if you feel that it's sort of philosophical, if you feel that a small number of full-time drivers should become employees and get benefits and probably have a much better situation than they're in now. Or if you feel that the majority of drivers, maybe 60 to 80% of drivers who are doing 10 or 20 hours a week or less, if you feel that they should be able to keep, you know, their kind of status right now as independent contractors and have that flexibility to sort of work whenever and wherever. And of course, there are some caveats there that we, you know, it's not quite that simple, but I think that's kind of the general philosophical debate, and kind of some people obviously fall on one side of the debate and others fall on the other.
Right. So we'll see what happens in November. It's going to be an interesting race for sure. And I'm sure everyone in California is going to get bombarded by these ads. I'm already
$110 million, I think, goes pretty far. I mean, even if you think about it, right, you know, I don't know how many people are in California, 30, 40, 50 million, maybe more, but you can kind of almost see that they're kind of like dollar for dollar matching the number of people, and probably eligible voters is obviously
40 million people in California.
Yeah, and eligible voters is probably less than that, right? Let's call it 30 million. So you can basically imagine that in certain demographics, they're going to be spending quite a bit of money to get you to vote, you know, their way on this.
Yes, yes. Well, wrapping things up, our last topic here is the pandemic. Obviously, we're all going through this experience together. And as a result, I mean, we've seen Uber and Lyft rides go down by a lot. I mean, in some core markets, they're down as much as 85% in Q2. Lyft also reported similar declines in riderships. So I guess, you know, my question is, what kind of activity have the ride-hailing drivers that are still out there, what have they been seeing? Because I've been actually seeing some posts on, you know, some driver forums that some drivers have actually been doing really well during the pandemic. But obviously, I mean, there are the risks that come with driving during the pandemic. So what are some of your thoughts there?
So I think that it's funny that we sometimes forget how big of a company Uber is. And I want to say that, I don't know the latest and greatest figures, but you know, in the past, they've said they're doing anywhere from 3 to 7 million trips a day around the world. So let's call it 5 million trips. So if you're down 85% of 5 million trips, that's still hundreds of thousands of trips that are happening, right?
Right, yeah.
So even though, you know, you and I, like I haven't taken an Uber in what, 6 months now at this point. point, right? And a lot of people haven't taken an Uber in a very long time. There are still rides happening. And we saw basically early on in the pandemic, I think a lot of drivers, when we didn't know a lot of drivers were very worried of, you know, if they could catch coronavirus from driving. And I think there was a lot of apprehension there. And then when all of the government assistance programs came out, a lot of drivers stopped driving because a majority, you know, again, a majority are part-time and they could make more money by not working than they could by working. So in the middle of the pandemic, you had a weird situation where a lot of drivers weren't driving, yet there were still some rides happening. And so there was sort of, even though demand was way down, like you mentioned, with a lot of those statistics, demand was actually greater than supply in a lot of places. And so the drivers who were willing to work were actually making pretty good money. We featured a couple stories. They were a bit of an outlier, but we had drivers making $50 an hour, for example, in Arizona, which is sort of more of a second tier market. You know, Phoenix is not like Los Angeles, San Francisco in terms of Uber and Lyft and rideshare demand. And we featured the story of a guy who was making $50 an hour and working 80 hours a week. And this wasn't that long ago. This was only a month or two ago. And of course, the big caveat there is that he was potentially, you know, risking himself to COVID, and Arizona did have a big spike. So I'll sort of, we can leave that discussion to you know, something else. But, you know, from a pure sort of earnings and supply and demand side, that's kind of what we've been seeing here. You know, not every city is the same, but there's a bit of a imbalance because of that. And now that we're coming out of this government, this major government assistance period, I think it'll start to become more in balance in the near term.
Right. Do you think that Uber and Lyft are doing enough to protect their drivers from COVID? Right. Because I know, I believe it's Lyft. They're offering the sneeze guards for like a certain percentage of their drivers, and then for the other percentage they're like, well, you have to pay, you know, $50 for these sneeze guards, right? And there's been arguments saying, hey, if you're working in ride hailing, right, they should be giving you this stuff for free. I know Uber's had trouble distributing some PPE to their drivers that they had been offering, but do you think they're going far enough there?
So I would say early on both companies were definitely not going far enough, and I think the starkest example of this is that, you know, Uber was actually one of the first tech companies to send their workers, send their corporate employees home. Yet at the same time, they were sort of parading their drivers out on the front line. So here you can kind of imagine yourself, you're a driver and you're seeing these news stories. Oh, Uber's sending all their employees home because it's not safe to be, you know, in the office because of coronavirus. And you're sitting there in your car picking up 12 to 15 people a day. And you can kind of imagine, this seems like maybe not the smartest idea. You know, sort of seems like this kind of two-tiered system that isn't very fair to the drivers. And so I think that especially early on when they weren't getting a ton of PPP and there were sourcing issues that many companies were facing, I think they weren't doing enough. Now I think they've bulked up, you know, like a lot of companies, they've bulked up their supply lines and kind of done a much better job. We just wrote an article the other day about now you can go to the Uber hubs. Basically, they usually are open a couple hours a day in certain cities and pick up PPE and all that. And I think some of the processes are more in place. And now that both companies are starting to test things like sneeze guards, I think where it does get a little tricky though is that first, number one, I mean, it's expensive for these companies to provide all, you know, if they were to provide every active driver with a sneeze guard, you know, for example, right? A plexiglass barrier. And I'm not making an excuse for them, but I am saying, you know, probably one of the top reasons why they wouldn't do it is because it's expensive. And then, you know, sort of also number two, I think it does kind of, circling back to the employment issues, it does sort of start to get into this weird place where, I mean, they can't really require that every driver have a plastic barrier sneeze guard in their car, because if you're an independent contractor, they can't really even make you wear an Uber shirt while you're driving, right? That's one of the things they look at in the test. And so you get into this weird situation where even like with masks, right, Uber and Lyft both require drivers and riders to wear masks. But even something like that, I think there's an argument to be made that Uber can't tell its drivers to wear masks, even though it's the right thing to do. And it's kind of like everyone knows that you should be doing it by now. You know, I think that it does sort of start to blur the lines of that employee and independent contractor debate. And I think that's one of the advantages that companies who have employees, right, if you worked for a Starbucks or McDonald's, they tell you what to do. They tell you when to go place. They tell you where to go. They have a lot more control. And so I don't know that it's going to be a huge issue for Uber and Lyft, but I do think it's a challenge they'll face in that sort of PPE department.
Yes. Well, always, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Harry. I think, you know, you're definitely One of the people I look up to as far as, you know, just covering the transportation space. So thank you so much for so many years of inspiration and dedication to the space. And I'm sure everyone thanks you, especially all the media networks that always ask you to chime in.
Yeah,
no, the 2020s, the ABCs. But that's going to be a wrap for today's podcast. Thanks so much for offering all these insights. And I hope to speak with you again soon. Yeah,
appreciate it, Johan. You've been doing it almost as long as I have, too. So I appreciate it. And if people do want to reach out, they can find my podcast at The Rideshare Guy, or they can always send me an email to harry@therideshareguy.com.
Yes, yes. And be sure to listen to his podcast and his interview with Dara Khosrowshahi if you want to learn more about this benefits plan. But that's going to be a wrap for us on the Inside Transportation Podcast this week. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.